And welcome back. The St. Louis American is observing its 85th anniversary with a circulation of 70,000. It's the third largest weekly in Missouri and the largest weekly targeting African-American readers. It has been awarded top national honors for journalistic excellence several times. It was named the best African-American newspaper in the country in 2006. Dr. Donald Suggs has been principal owner, publisher, and executive editor for some three decades now, and he joins me in studio. Dr. Suggs, welcome. So nice to see you.
Thank you, Don. Thank you. Nice to be here.
And congratulations. This is 85 years. That's a good run.
Well, that's a long run, yes, although I haven't been there for all 85 years, but it is. It's been a good run.
I note that it has been published consecutively for 79 years. What happened to the other six or during
that,
the other
I don't
six?
No, you know, there was a very difficult period where the paper was started in 1928, and then came the Depression, and so there was some times during that period. I'm not certain about that. I know the last 79 years it's been good, but if my staff will be very angry if I don't remind you that we're the largest weekly of any type. The St. Louis American produces or distributes more newspapers on a weekly basis than the Business Journal and the Riverfront Times combined.
70,000, is that the accurate number?
That's the accurate number, Don, yeah. Yes.
What was going on at the time that it was founded, to cause it to be founded? Do you know?
Oh, I do, absolutely. I mean, that was a time when, of course, there was almost absolute racial separation. And so you have an awful lot of institutions in the African-American community that serve that community. And newspapers were a part of that. The first newspaper, I think, probably started in about 1912, the St. Louis Argus. And then a group of businessmen came along and decided to start the American in 1928. But there's a history of – there have been – over time, there have been dozens of newspapers in St. Louis that targeted African-Americans in prior years.
And what kinds of stories and what kinds of material was it dealing with in the earliest days?
In the earliest days, obviously, the issues were more obvious because in the days of racial separation, there was all these efforts to try to encourage more fairness, more access, more inclusion. And so things were pretty stark in those days, Don. I think that they also were involved, as their white counterparts were, some of them in yellow journalism. There was a lot of sensational stuff as well. But there were some issues that were pretty much universal for African Americans. Don't shop where you can't work. And so the early days of civil rights movement were starting about those times. This was maybe a decade after the First World War, where African Americans had gone and served. And their attitude about their particular position in society was a problem for them, and so that was a difficult time.
It was also a little less than a decade after the race riots in East St. Louis.
In East St. Louis, absolutely, that's right, and that's East St. Louis is not unique in the sense that there were race riots, because at that time there was kind of a confluence. African Americans coming up from the South represented poor, cheap labor, and so there was this. In addition to the racial animus, there was also the economics behind this. Blacks were recruited to the chagrin of labor organizers lots of times. So you had that natural kind of enmity between the two groups, in addition to the racial overtone.
How would you define the role of the newspaper today? Your newspaper.
Our newspapers. Well, I think, newspapers in general are very challenged. Print industry, you look at the great newspapers in our country. That is also true of newspapers like ourselves that serve a niche. Our particular business model tries to focus on more local coverage, the sort of things that get very close to the community. 20% of our, for instance, of our content comes from the community itself. So whether that's commentaries or calendars or reunions or – so if we're not seen as an extension of the community itself and its interests, its concerns, I think if there's any opportunity for newspapers generally, it has to be where in those smaller, mid-sized markets where people see the newspapers kind of an extension of community, kind of an institution, part of the community. So we work very hard to try to ensure that people consider us to be relevant to what's going on in their communities.
You speak of it in terms of a niche publication, which obviously it is, but how would you evaluate the coverage of the community, of your community, the African-American community, by what I'll call the mainstream?
Mainstream. Yes. Well, of course, I mean, all these things are, I mean, it's not like 1928. I mean, no. You know, these things are all very much integrated now. Our lives, education, public accommodations, these are not the issues that we saw in 1928. Well, the American, I think, you know, we have an investigative reporter. For instance, we're doing some work now on some things that are going on in some of the North County municipalities around their elections. We're pretty outspoken on the political side. We have pretty strong views about that. But Don, the content is varied. I mean, there's high school sports. There's some social goings on. There's entertainment news. You know, there's editorials and commentaries. So it's a varied kind of diet because presumably our paper is distributed in 850 locations, but it's free. So it means people can pick it up fairly easily. But when they take it home, maybe mom reads a section, somebody else reads another section. So it's kind of a varied content that we have, trying to be relevant to the mixed audiences that we're trying to reach.
Do you feel, though, that the mainstream, if
yes.
you will, is adequately serving the African American community?
Well, I think that there's an African American perspective that's not monolithic either, because you see some huge changes in the years I've been in St. Louis, for instance. I think it's almost impossible for them to drill down to a certain level, and there's certain concerns around African American community. It's very difficult for somebody outside that community to, I think, reflect that accurately and consistently.
You know, one of the reasons I asked that question is because we've done many programs on this particular subject, and it's discussed a lot in this community, and that is the level of racial polarization in St. Louis, which stands out perhaps a little more prominently than most other cities of comparable size in this country. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that a lot of that, I don't think there's a simple answer for that. I think St. Louis is a city that, when I came here, was a pretty vibrant community, and I think it's been lagging over time. And so over the years, a lot of the people who I knew when I came to St. Louis, who were paragons of leadership in the community, we don't see the caliber of folks here in St. Louis, because it's not considered to be a go-to place. It's not considered to be a place. So we have an awful lot of bright St. Louisans in Atlanta and Washington and Los Angeles and Chicago and New York. I have three children. None of them made a career in St. Louis. So I think over time that declined, and of course this dramatic shift in the economy, where manufacturing, that you know historically was meant that working class people could sort of keep their families together, you see the absence of that. And when things are going badly, when there's not a lot of prosperity, then I think any differences that people may have between each other is heightened. So in some ways, though, Don, along the racial side, it's the worst of times, but also in some ways it's the best of times. If you look at it, over time, where we see African Americans today, and not just the President of the United States, but also if you look at the star level people in the military, I mean, African Americans just were not integrated into military forces until Harry Truman. So I think over time we've seen some changes. The bad news is that the growth and the intensity of the underclass, and unfortunately disproportionately African-American, is a real problem. Because in the past, the African-American community was more or less cohesive around these issues. Now, this underclass is extremely difficult to deal with, and I think it's a real challenge to all of us, black and white, and we don't pay more attention to it. And you take Chicago as a great city, but they are being pummeled by the growth and intensity of the underclass in Chicago.
Just looking at what's going on the street, in the streets. I mean, the shootings, the killings, the innocents, those lives are being lost in the hundreds.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's very – go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's intergenerational poverty. I mean, I grew up in a very poor community. I'm from a working class family, and there was some internal social control in that community. There were some things. We did not lock the doors, for instance. We're a poor community. Mm-hmm. We didn't lock the doors at night, for instance. There was a certain kind of decorum that operated, you know, for the most part in those communities. And a lot of that's been lost. People who are not place-bound, Don, do not stay in these communities. And so the strength that you would need in any community, much of it is just, you know, they go elsewhere.
As you've indicated, members of your own family have done that. I think it's very telling. I mean, there is brain drain is not too strong a term to use.
Absolutely.
When it comes to this.
And we pay a price. I think the level of leadership in any community is extremely important. And I think that St. Louis, unfortunately, has lost a lot of awfully bright, able people who just don't see opportunity here, and particularly among African Americans.
What can the St. Louis American do to try to change direction, if you will?
Well, what we try to do is we try to encourage discussion around these issues. And we don't try to impose. We don't necessarily know all the answers. But, for instance, last night we had a group called Young Leaders, 20 African Americans under 40, who have high potential for leadership. We try to show young people some of the advantages of St. Louis. There's some trade-offs here, wonderful trade-offs. I'm from outside Chicago and always loved big cities. Matter of fact, I was on my way to New York to train. Came to St. Louis, and it's been a very, in a lot of ways, very satisfying life because of the access here. I think that if we can convince young people, and if they start to aggregate among themselves, and they start to take on some responsibility or at least take on the belief that something better can happen in our community, I think it'll serve us well.
That sounds like a very slow and even tedious process.
It is a slow, tedious process, but I think if we could get some economic juice going here, most of these cities that we call successful, Don, most of these cities depend heavily on people from elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to Atlanta and you go to the professional class, those people, they weren't born and raised in Atlanta. They were born elsewhere. Same thing applies to Dallas or Phoenix or Houston, or for that matter, Chicago. I mean, some places attract people. I mean, you're attracted to Silicon Valley. You're attracted to San Francisco. You're attracted to L.A., and so you don't have to depend just on the local folks there. So if St. Louis could find – if we could find some way to get some kind of economic push going on here, and people could see this as a place where there's opportunity. You know, I always make the point that – some people want the sun and the beach and the mountains, but most people want opportunity. And if the perception is that there's no opportunity, you know, if people feel that they are limited in St. Louis and they can't, you know, live out the kind of life and have the kind of career they'd like to have, then they're not anxious to stay here. But if you could switch that and change that around, then I think a lot of things could happen, Don.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Donald Suggs. He is the publisher and executive editor of the St. Louis American, which right now is observing its 85th anniversary. We have a few minutes left with Dr. Suggs. If you'd like to get into the conversation, do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stopublicradio.org or reach us through Twitter or Facebook. Coming back to the paper, Dr. Suggs, you may or may not be aware of the Pew State of the Media.
Yes.
Report that came out earlier this week. I have a note here on that. The story about how African-American-oriented news media coped last year was a difficult and dismal one.
Yes.
Papers all over the country had a difficult time. And I'm sure that is not reflected only in the African-American publications.
Yeah, yes.
But your take on that and how is it impacting you?
Well, you know, I think that we talked about brain drain earlier. I mean, people that you'd want to employ and be involved in the black press are attracted elsewhere. I mean, we have some outstanding African-American journalists, and they don't work in the black press. Historically, they worked in the black press. That's a problem. The environment in which newspapers operate, the market forces that shape a newspaper and whether it can be successful or not, have changed. And so some people have stuck with this old business model, and it's just not workable, Don. It's not tenable. I'm involved in a trade association of 200 black newspapers, and I can tell you unequivocally, very few of them do reasonably well. And so I think it's a challenge like any field. If you don't adapt, you know, you'll become irrelevant, and I think that's happened with black newspapers, unfortunately.
Do you have any sense of how to adapt to this news?
Well, the American, you know, as a model, I think, you know, we've done reasonably well. We've grown over the last decade, and we've been able to attract some journalists, professional journalists, and we've been encouraged by if the community embraces you, Don, if you're embraced by your community, then you have a chance. And if you're not embraced by your community, then you have no chance. And a lot of that has to do with creating some value for your reader and for your advertiser. And if you don't do that, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to last long.
It's become a digital world.
It's become a digital world, yes.
And many of the newspapers across the country are acknowledging that and trying to find some sort of business model.
Business model around that. Yes, we're multi-platform. You know, we're online and we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I mean, we're currently – the challenge for the print media is that it's been difficult for them to monetize that. People want the content. They want it in real time. They're interested in our content. And we get, you know, a very impressive number of hits. Actually, Don, I should make this point. The 12% of our readership is not African-American. So there are people interested in what's going on in that community or from that perspective. But no, I mean, the digital age is here. You've got to, you know, adjust to it. I hope we find some way to be able to earn some revenue.
Tap into it.
Up to now, it's been difficult.
Yeah, I note that this week, I guess it was this week, that the Washington Post has announced it's going to follow the New York Times and others in establishing some sort of a paywall for people to reach its content. Anything like that going through your head?
No, at this point. The answer to that is no. I do think community newspapers operate from a little different base. But, you know, you have to be flexible. I mean, we're going to look at that and see how it goes, and we'll see. We'll see, Don. We'll see.
We have a couple of calls. Let's get them in as time allows. We'll begin with Mary on a cell phone. Mary, I hope you're not driving.
No, I'm sitting in my car, but I'm not driving.
Atta girl.
Donald, it's Mary King.
Oh, Mary, how are you, my dear? Oh, it's been such a long time.
I know, ages and ages. Donald, I was tutoring a while back at De La Salle Middle School.
Yes.
Way up in North St. Louis.
Yes.
And every time I would go, I would see all this empty space, all these vacant lots. And since there's such a dearth of fresh produce up there, I thought, it would be so wonderful if somebody could get together a movement to turn those lots into gardens.
Gardens, yes. And there have been some efforts made. I don't know how much progress they've made up to now, Mary. But no, your thinking is absolutely correct. I mean, that's one of the things I think that would, you know, be important for the community. We'll just have to see if there's more progress made. But no, that idea is not uncommon in Detroit and other places across the country where you've got a lot of empty lots.
And there are other issues as well. I mean, talk about urban gardens. There are food security, my least favorite term anymore, issues. There are food desert issues, and these can be addressed that way.
Oh, Don, if we had time, we could talk for hours and hours about the implications of diet, nutrition, lifestyle, obesity. I mean, all these problems that we know about, we read about, they're compounded, unfortunately, in segments of the African-American community. So it's very disheartening in that way. But no, it's there's a lot of factors, you know, that come together and make things difficult.
This is where you come in. I mean, this is where your publication comes in.
We're trying to encourage, yeah, people to think more broadly and to be more creative in the way they respond to things. But again, it has to do with the caliber of people who are addressing these problems. I mean, I think that, you know, we have a great university, Washington University, because you have some great leadership out there. It wasn't a great university 50 years ago. So I think St. Louis has a chance to be a much more important city. I think that some things that are going on now around startups, and I think that what we're talking about, I suppose I can't be discussing election issues, but I think St. Louis has some possibilities. I do think we've underutilized our potential. We haven't realized our potential, and I'm guardedly optimistic about what can happen. But it's going to come down to people and leadership.
You may not want to talk about electoral issues, but I think Ed calling from St. Louis does.
Okay.
But Ed, let me just tell you, the time is starting to get away. So if you can make your question or comment brief, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, I'm calling from St. Louis Hills, and I walk over to my library at Boudreaux Library, and I pick up your paper. And last time I saw the paper, and I was really struck by the front page where I saw Lewis Reed embracing his wife, and that really struck me. And it makes me think that we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way.
Oh, I earlier in the program, I did mention that this, in some ways, is the best of times. I mean, I can tell you in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of things change dramatically. That's a great shot. You know, in our business, you always want to get a photograph of the moment. And that was a special moment, the two of them embracing. And you're right, it had meaning beyond just the two of them. So, no, I think there are a lot of encouraging things that go on. My children, their friends are all races. I mean, they grew up totally different set of attitudes, totally different experiences. So, no, I think there's some hopeful signs. It's just unfortunate we have too many people that are locked in this intergenerational poverty. If you took, you know, the top third of the African-American community, I mean, you could integrate them into the mainstream of society much more easily. But when you have these wide disparities, cultural disparities, it's not just a matter of race. It is cultural disparity. When you have that, it's much more difficult.
You keep coming back to that, and I certainly understand it. Is this what you would consider to be the single most important and perhaps difficult problem to deal with in this community?
Race? You mean racial issues?
No, the poverty.
Poverty disparities. Well, yeah, I think disparities. Yeah. I mean, when your economy is not, you know, going, and it's not, when you're not thriving in that way, and that, you know, and there's not an opportunity for people to be employed. Of course, we want them to be employable, which is also a part of it as well. But what I do want to say, if you want to know what the St. Louis American believes could make the most difference, this is not a short-term fix, is I believe the most important thing we could do is address early childhood education. And I think people from across the ideological spectrum agree to that. You get these young people, if they can get started very early, pre-K, you know, with quality programs, I think it could make a huge difference. Now, some of the existing problems is going to be extremely difficult to rest with them and to try to turn them around. But I think if we could start with our young people, very young people, of all the initiatives that are out there, if you ask me what's the most promising in this area, it's early childhood education.
Well, I wish we had more time, Donald Suggs. These are important issues, and let's hope your voice can be heard not only in this region but also throughout the state, because there are some people in the middle of the state that have some decision-making to do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Donald Suggs, editor and publisher of the St. Louis American, now observing its 85th anniversary. Once again, congratulations to you and your staff on that.
Thank you very much, Don.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at Proposition P, which will be on the ballot next week in the city and county, and would provide funding for the Gateway Arch renovation, regional trails, and both city and county parks. Then we'll talk with a graphic designer from Israel who started that campaign called Israel Loves Iran. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.